Back with Franklin in room 207, and now we're going to talk about the beginning of the work of the Church of the Nazarene in Albania, and possibly what it was like to be a college student at Northwest Nazarene College in 1954. Franklin, go.
Albania is a delightful little country on the Adriatic, with a remarkable and tragic history. Following World War II, where a dictator with a rather extreme form of communism took hold and became the first nation, I've been told, on earth to officially write into their constitution atheism, and was so extreme that they went into graveyards and sandblasted crosses off of gravestones and did everything conceivably possible to destroy any kind of religious influence, both Christianity and Islam, because that whole area had been controlled for hundreds of years by Turkey. So there was a lot of Islamic influence through that part of the world. So you've got this history where they, up until about 1990, Mr. Hoxha was the dictator, and he was paranoid about being invaded by the United States and Western nations. So he spent a lot of his income of the nation isolating his people. It was illegal to listen to radio, television, anything. They became so extreme that when the Soviet Union went through its evolution, they wouldn't go along with it, and they affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party, so they began to import a lot of Chinese equipment, like trucks and stuff like that, into Albania. There was no private ownership of cars or, of course, of property or anything. It was really an extreme form of communist ideology in Albania. Hermann Geschwantner became a Nazarene missionary. He's from Germany. And Hermann had a lot of contacts through his earlier work in literature development in Eastern Europe, including in Albania. So there was a lady in Albania who worked for another organization. I cannot remember her name, but she was a dynamic lady who had done her best to serve under these difficult circumstances, and Hermann knew her. So when all of these changes began to happen after the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, and these governments began to fall like dominoes, Hermann began to travel and consolidate some of his earlier contacts, including with this lady in Albania. So I went down there my first time, probably in 1990, and I have never seen a country like that anywhere. It was absolute chaos. For the first time, people were allowed to drive cars. There were not even traffic rules. They didn't even know what side of the road to travel on. There were no driver's licenses at the time. The criminal elements of the country began to take control of the currency, import cars, old Mercedes from Germany and other places in Europe. Just a lot of really, really bad things happening. Hmm. At one point, every factory in the country closed down except one. And the one they would not allow to close was making bread, because they knew if they, people would just starve. And there was almost no food available. On my first trip into Albania, we could not get any food except what had been smuggled in the, into the country from the American army from Kuwait and Iraq. And
how long were you there?
Oh, a week or so. But, you know, I went back and forth frequently. One of my early trips, maybe the second or third trip, was with Dr. Gary Morsch, who is the head of Heart to Heart. He and I went in, along with Herman, and went into a couple of the hospitals. Hepatitis type, maybe type C, was infecting 25% of the population at that time.
Whoa.
And we went into several of the hospitals, found out they didn't have any medicines. The doctors were all standing around with no medicines to prescribe, equipment that was broken, patients on the floor, just really, really bad conditions. So it was under those circumstances then that we decided we better move in as a church through Compassionate Ministry and start to partner with this lady and to develop some ministries that would give us a presence on the ground. And as time passed, we found providentially a wonderful couple that actually agreed to go live there, David and Sandy Allison by name. And David and Sandy are a true pioneering couple. And they started to live in Albania under just unbelievable circumstances. Lack of heat, lack of water. Sandy would have to haul water in plastic buckets for several blocks.
Wow.
To even provide drinking water for their children. And whatever pioneering we hear about in prehistoric eras of people out in jungles and this and that, whatever we hear about was being done in the 1990s by David and Sandy Allison.
Amazing.
But in addition to that, David had this unique ability to find young leaders. I don't know how he did it. I really don't. But he just had a unique ability to not only identify potential young Albanian leaders, but to help cultivate and disciple them in the faith and in leadership within the church. And so many of those early Albanian Nazarene leaders were the direct result of the mentoring of David and Sandy Allison. I give them a lot of credit.
That's awesome.
Now, Albania, prior to World War II, had been under the control of Italy. And so there was a lot of connection between Italy and Albania. It's just a several-hour ferry ride from Italy over to Albania. If you look at your maps, you can tell how close they are geographically.
Yep.
One of the stories that I'll never forget in those early trips to Albania was we were in the home of a teacher in the public school system who was a secret believer during the time of Hoxha, that is the dictator. And she was a believer. But as a teacher, she had to sign a pledge that she was an atheist. So here was her ethical dilemma. I sign the pledge and retain my job, and my family is not tortured. Or I don't sign the pledge because I'm a believer and I cannot deny my faith. I lose my job and my family is tortured immediately, probably jailed. What do I do? And I remember sitting in her little living room, she and her husband, as she told us the story of her struggle with that dilemma. And it fortunately was in the end of the 1980s that this was happening to her. And so she, at the end of the day, didn't have to make the decision because the revolution came. And in the chaos of the revolution, she was able to continue teaching without signing the document or not signing it. It just went away. But I thought to myself at the time, I remember how many sort of secret believers there were who were faced with similar kinds of issues. It would be difficult to really describe, unless you were there, the atmosphere in Albania at the time. It's a beautiful country, completely undeveloped at that time, along the beaches and coastland and mountains. Absolutely undeveloped at that time. And the people just so open to learn new things that they've been denied the ability to learn, even from listening to the radio, which most of them had radios in it. Under the cover of dark, they would sneak listening to radio coming in from Italy. But if they were caught, of course, they were jailed immediately.
Right. So where in the progression of the story where you're meeting with this teacher and she's having to make this decision, is this the same trip where you're going to meet with governing officials to begin the work, or is that a later trip?
Probably later trips. That we had to figure out a way to register the church as a legal body.
In the chaos.
And because the court system had just disintegrated and all of the Hoxha lackeys had fled the country or in some way been removed from office, but nobody to take their place. And here we are trying to figure out how to get the right signatures on documents that could be registered with the court to actually register us as a body, as a separate legal body. And so in one particular case, we had a meeting set up with the judge, which we never made because of a stuck elevator. And
how long were you stuck?
Oh, over an hour.
It's not so funny. I shouldn't
finally,
be laughing.
Finally, we had a young lady that was had been hired by somebody, I don't recall who, as a translator. She had learned English, and so she was able to help some of the Western organizations that were trying to come into the country to translate between Albanian and English. And we had hired her, and she was a university student, beautiful, probably early 20s student. And I took her, again, I don't remember her name. I said to her, we need to get this document signed. Do you know anybody down at the courthouse? And she said, well, yeah, I probably have met some people down there. And I said, will you go with me down there and try to figure out if we can find the Chief Justice or the person that thinks they're Chief Justice to sign this document? Well, when we walked into the courthouse, it was absolute chaos. It was crowded. There were people milling around, yelling at each other, and there were a series of offices off on the side, and every one of them was full of people yelling and screaming at each other. And she said to me, this man sitting here is called the Chief Justice. I think he's brand new. He doesn't really know what he's doing. But she said, if I can work my way up to his desk, I'll take the paper and tell him where to sign it. So I sort of stood back because, you know, it doesn't matter how well you try, it's hard to hide the fact that you're an American. And Americans stood out at that time. I mean, there were very few of us there. So I sort of stood back while she kind of weaseled her way or got through the crowd.
Wooed her way there.
Yeah, up. As I said, she was very attractive. This didn't hurt.
Yep.
And she took the paper, I remember, she put it on his desk, and he didn't know who she was at all. But she took her finger and pointed to the line that he, and just told him, you need to sign this document here. And he never asked any questions or anything. He just signed it, and we were registered. But things like that took place in a lot of these countries. When there's revolution, things are chaotic. And you can get a lot of things done during a revolution that you wouldn't normally.
I like that.
But the work in the church in Albania has done very well, and they've produced a lot of young people that have been key people for the denomination.
Thanks, Franklin.